brought to you by DaytimeConfidential.com. On today's show, I was on vacation, and if you're a longtime listener, you know what that often means. Stay tuned. Jamie Giddens, welcome.
Hey.
Jillian Bowe, welcome.
Hello.
Well, last week I was on vacation, and if you're a longtime listener of Daytime Confidential, you know that often, though not always, when I go on vacation, something big happens in soap news. Last week, when I revealed that I was leaving on vacation on Monday, the next day, Jean Passanante announced her retirement. You're welcome. Later on Friday, well, the day I took off on my vacation, Sheila Carter was revealed. You're welcome. Also, while I was gone, it was announced that Eileen Davidson is returning to Days of Our Lives. You're welcome. Where you know that Ron Carlovati is going to write the fuck out of Sammy and Eileen's character. I cannot wait. Jamie, what is the impact of Jean Passanante leaving General Hospital?
I really don't know. I know that, you know, Jean has written for a couple of decades now on many different writing teams, and according to her Facebook message, it's just time for her to go. I know a lot of fans feel the same way.
No lies there, girl.
I'm kind of in a be careful what you wish for, because a lot of fans were ready for Guza to go, and we got Garen Wolf and that Helena daughter girl, you know, being slaughtered in the Cassadine living room.
We got the HIV needles.
Just saying, you know, from what I gather, Shelley Altman will be solo head writer, and I mean,
solo soap killer.
You know, she killed my Ryan Harrison on Another World, so I'm not sitting here saying goodbye, Jean, bye, girl. You know, I'm like, well, okay. When look at her, when Sonny get murked on a train trestle, or when let's see who, Laura Spencer gets gutted like a fish on the docks, y'all'll be going.
She ain't gonna kill Sonny.
She killed him and then wrote an essay about how cathartic it was and how it helped her career. And
Wanna hear about it? Here it goes.
You realize that was the leading man and the most popular character on the show at the time. I mean, I'm happy you were able to get your groove back. But what about the readers, the fans, the fans. I mean, you know, anyway, I've never been that big of a fan in terms of, you know, her soap choices, but she is there. It is what it is. I'm not hating the show like a lot of people are right now. So I guess if it stays, you know, at least compelling enough for me not to want to fall asleep and, you know, I'm not expecting any radical soap saving efforts, because I don't even know if they feel like they have to do any radical soap saving efforts, because, you know, that's a regime, and I mean above the writers' heads, that I don't really think they take, you know, I think they lean into negative criticism to justify, oh, all fans just want what they want and blah, blah, blah. But I don't think they truly lean into constructive criticism. And by they, I mean the executive producer and the network reps at that show. So I don't really know, other than someone at the very top saying there needs to be a massive change, if the things that make, like, Luke, like, that upset you every week, or that upset some of the other fans, I don't know if this head writer change is going to change that. Because, I mean, one of the things that, you know, was bandied about when Ron, you know, was fired was that, you know, the storylines were nonsensical and over the top, and there was too much violence again. Well, you know, in this year alone, Julian Jerome attacked Alexis, his love interest, in terms of nonsensical. We just had a little boy you know, basically be made into a de facto assassin, which I, again, I didn't mind that, but I didn't mind Ron either. So, you know, so I just sometimes wonder, well, you know, if Ron's masks and, you know, violent storytelling were, I don't see that much has changed other than it lost the oomph and the energy of Ron's storytelling. But in terms of the overall trajectory of stories, I haven't seen much change. Maybe it's that they stay in their place and don't talk back, you know, when Nathan Varney has suggestions and Ron didn't do that. Maybe that's what keeps them, you know, employed and able to actually retire as opposed to being booted out after saving the show. I don't know. I don't know much these days, but I do know I don't expect any radical commitment to history or learning the history or anything like that. I don't, you know, foresee any more balance in the storytelling for Sonny or any of the things that, you know, longtime fans are demanding online. I don't see any of that happening here. I think this will be okay. Gene's gone. Shelley, you are to proceed as we have already been doing, and you are to listen to Frank and Nathan and go be a good transcriptionist.
Quick question for either of you. Do you know if Gene was at As the World Turns during the spa storyline?
Yes, I
yeah.
believe.
Was because as... I thought Wait, she was, hold on, and then hold on, I was hold on. Like, what does she have against Maura West's face?
Because, well, she didn't write that story.
I'm just joking.
That's a Hogan Sheffer story.
I know it's one of those stories, but this whole time when this story's going on with Ava being burned.
That was one of the best stories at the end of that show. That story was hilarious, bold, and great.
No, I'm not saying it was a bad story. I'm just, as I've been watching Ava deal with the fact that she's burned this time, I'm like, I think Gene was on a show the last time Maura was on a show where her face and stuff was changed. Jillian, what's going on with your girl, Sam?
I don't know. I mean, I guess they're trying to do like a situation where, you know, Sam has PTSD from her time with Olivia. I'm like, her being over the top could give that to anyone, so I feel Sam.
It's not PTSD, but close.
What is it? Postpartum?
No, it's not postpartum either. I'm not gonna say, but pre-partum? Let's just say, huh?
I'm joking. I don't even think that exists.
Stop. Just sit over there.
You know, Sam has a condition that is going to make her go increasingly cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs.
Is she bipolar?
Jungle Madness.
No, she's not bipolar, but...
Schizophrenic?
Yeah. No, she's not schizophrenic, but let's just say they haven't had a chance to do, you know, female goes hysterical in a long time, so they've come up with
a way to
make that happen.
I was going to say, Jesus, don't tell me it's DID. Lord.
No, it's not DID.
That's what I was worried about. And then I was what are they going to do? Make her a good girl?
Shut your face up.
Well, she's been
bitch.
A good girl for years now at this point. I would relish her being, you know, the bad girl Sam that I used to love to hate. But I mean, she's pretty much become Susie Homemaker. And, you know, this was an effort to give her a story because she hasn't had a story of her own in years because this show only gives consistent stories
to the minions.
Well, now Laura Wright gets a story every day, you know. But they act like, you know, I mean, Frank, he acts like he's writing love letters, you know, that he's staging staging of love letters with two actors, Laura and Mo. And it's an ensemble piece. And, you know, the other actors should get meaty stories, too. There's just some disconnect. I mean, God knows. I mean, I sat on this podcast for years defending Sonny and Carly because those are two of my favorite characters. But I'm sick of seeing their daily pathos and now the only real obstacle to the 17th chapter is you know, blah girl playing Jocelyn, giving Carly pop speak lectures in that in Carly's living room. You know, the mom, the definition of insanity is doing the same. I mean, she's like, you're on a cycle, mom. I'm like, is she 15 or is she 45 with a PhD? What teenager talks like that? How about simple dialogue like, Sonny had my dad deported. If you go back with him, I'm done. I'm going to Australia too. And then rushing out of the room so that we don't have three more scenes with this child. But she sat there and lectured Carly on psychology and what it means when you go, when you have a pattern of going back to the same man.
If that was Bobby, Bobby would have been like, don't sass me, girl.
Well, Carly tried all of that, but I'm sorry. I don't care about the mom stuff with that shit. Sonny sent her father. He deported her father. If I was Jocelyn, she would just have to pop me in the face because I would keep saying it. I wouldn't be giving her psych lessons, but I would. The point of, you know, that's the thing. But they can't make Sonny look bad, even though they had him have Jax deported. So the little girl couldn't say that, which was the obvious reason she should hate Sonny. It was, this is a cycle between you, mom. And I'm like, well, someone send her to Australia for a killer koala to attack her. It's like this scene, these scenes are just pitiable, and who cares about it? Is there really such a large swath of this audience that cares about the pathos between Sonny and his fifth Carly? I just don't believe it's the same as fans who watch Scandal really hoping Olivia and Fitz get it right, or fans that watch, you know, Days hoping for John and Marlena to finally get a story together. I just don't feel that Sonny and Laura Wright's version of Carly are some epic love story that the vast majority of GH fans are tuning in to be let that be their driving story. I just don't think, from the moment she became Carly, she's a great Carly recast. She was great in seeing, you know, she's always had great sexual chemistry with Ingo. I thought she was great with Sean. She's had other great pairings, Ted King, Roger Howarth. But she and Maurice have never had any real sexual chemistry. But now they're just, it's like a puzzle piece that doesn't fit. And they're just going to smush, just like Spencer. They're going to just smush those puzzle pieces. They're going to make them a thing together, no matter what, and you're going to like it. And I think that's why the ratings are bad.
Speaking of Spencer, best part of General Hospital for me this last week was his return and his showing out. Jillian, what'd you think?
Now, y'all know I like to give that little boy a hard time. You know, that's just me. But, baby, I enjoyed him. He saved it for me because I don't give a shit about Big Amy and her brother that we never knew about, and this terrible rewrite of history of Maxie being a mean girl in school when she was not a mean girl. And I'll fight anybody who tells me different because I watched her in high school, but I digress. But Spencer was hilarious when he showed up and showed out with Laura, when he came busted through Lulu's house, and Lulu was like, they're like, you're having an attitude. And Lulu's like, oh yeah, you have an attitude. And he's like, I'm just questioning the company you keep, bitch. I was like, oh, when he told, and Laura's like, you watch your mouth, Spencer. He was like, psh, you watch your mouth, Spencer. I'm gonna ask you one more game. Watch your mouth, bitch.
When she said, I'm gonna ask you to change your tone.
Oh, you can! I said, oh my god! When that was hilarious, and when he mushed that puzzle piece up, and when he told Laura, he was like, she is the problem. Big Mama, she took my shut up punk ass daddy living in my house. They ride my ponies and they ride my lodge. I hate them. I hate her, the punk ass daddy, Big Mama.
I'm the little kid on that show who has a reaction he's supposed to. That's the reaction you have when someone kills your daddy and steals
your home.
You know, unlike Jocelyn, Sonny and you have a cycle, not, he deported my dad. You know, it's like, that kid gets to react like he's supposed to. He's the only person on the show, obviously, that remembers that before Valentine was talking like, you know, some French character in an Amelie cartoon. Mon chapi, cha cha fi fi fi, and frowning all of the time, that he murdered a very beloved character on this show. And they think that, you know, this, there's, again, there's a disconnect. Nicholas Cassadine is super beloved. You know, if you kill off Anthony Anderson on Black-ish, and then, you know, you have, let's just say, you have Judd Nelson come on Black-ish and kill off Anthony Anderson, and then put him in a romance with Rainbow's mama-in-law, I don't think the fans are going to be okay with that or care about their romance. They had Valentine kill off Nicholas. They made him, you know, they brought him on as the big bad of the big bag, like he was supposed to be. And then they try to force us to invest in his relationship with Nina, another newbie that I'm just going to be real. As much as I love Michelle Stafford, I'm increasingly wonder what's the point of these people on this show. So it's like, what is going on? It's like, what is, you know, now, and I know I've been the one defending them, and why I defend them.
Yeah, shit. So, that's why I'm like, no. I'm looking like,
what? So what I defend them on is the pace of the show, which, you know, that's not the leadership. That the pace of the show, well, I guess it's a part, they're a part of it too. But the pace of the show is still better, and the writing any given day is better. And again, I'm grading them on a curve. So yeah, I can still be frustrated and grade on a curve. But grading on a curve, if I'm going to my curve, if we would have talked about Days of Our Lives first, I would be in a very happy place about GH again, because I couldn't say nothing bad about GH after watching that little Jade and that little Joey and that little blonde one.
What was it this last week? Like, I was literally watching Days and I was thinking of, I had Jamie's words in my head, but I can't remember it now. It's something little nothing. Something little nothing. Vapid little nothings.
Okay, can we go back to GS?
We will, but they could rename it. This week, Days could have been, you know how they used to do those special night episodes? Night Sins. Days of Our Lives, whatever they used to call it. This week could have been marketed Days of Our Lives. Vapid little nothings.
Coma edition.
Now back to GH. Spencer is having the reaction that he's supposed to have. I love Jeannie Francis's.
It was great.
Yes, like Jeannie was flat. Shut your face.
What I loved about it is the fact that Spencer single-handedly came in and was the catalyst for making a lot more of those other character storylines interesting for me. I was sitting there watching and I was thinking to myself, damn, if they would keep this character on the show and just have him be a spiteful little kid growing up, or even if they sore-assed the character, he could
keep him. He has earned his right to grow up.
I have absolutely no problem with him growing up in the role because I love the kid. He's fantastic. But I know that sometimes they do it in order to try and tell teen storylines.
No, we lost that amazing little Sierra on Days for that.
I know, great little
Sierra, and we got.
I agree. I totally agree.
Lost the little girl who played Jocelyn.
That great little Jocelyn.
Fantastic.
You know, and then what did they even sore ass this girl for? All she's done is run around and talk. You know, she didn't even have a story. She's getting one, you know, for the summer. But why they sore ass that girl?
I just want to finish up my point. All I'm saying is I think that keeping Spencer around is a little mini Carly or a mini Sammy Brady, and they can do a lot with that.
That was another issue. This is why this regime can be so freaking phony. There were big issues about Ron writing those kids so grown up. Well, he's back and he's just as grown up. Y'all watched. Wasn't he just as grown up as he ever was?
Yes.
You heard what Laura called him and I was hollering because I'm like, finally a white woman is going to say what he is. She said, oh, he's so sassy. I'm like,
they said sassy. I said, why y'all want to do that?
Yes, but it also
made Dante and Lulu interesting.
Well, yeah, no. So, yeah, but I want to go back to, because Jillian mentioned Amy and Nathan. Now, that is where I do have to leave the team, because I'm adoring them. I think that this is a fun little rom-com. I think that that actress is so great. My only fear is she and Kirsten Storms kind of duplicate each other's energy. So I'm wondering what a triangle with Maxie and Amy would be like, because Maxie's also blonde. And, you know, I mean, yes.
I guess that depends on which Maxie comes back.
Well,
because badass Maxie can be very manipulative. And if they go that direction.
We haven't seen badass Maxie since Guza. I mean, if you're talking about the Maxie who, you know, was pointedly sleeping with Elizabeth's husband and supplying.
See, I'm like, is this regime confusing that for her being in high school?
Exactly what's happening? I think that what's happening is,
I'm like, when was she a bad girl in high school?
You know, and here's the thing about rewrites of history, and you know, it's always annoying, but I'm not as upset with this as I would be some of the great. When you rewrite a historical point, when you rewrite something we knew happened on screen, like Nicky Newman's cult leader was a woman, you know, saying that, you know, this girl feeling that Maxie was a mean girl, maybe that's how she felt to Maxie because
the reason why I don't like it is because we watched Maxie get the mean girl treatment by guys in school
that's where this regime just doesn't pay attention.
That's why I'm like,
you know, but all soap opera regimes do that. I mean, they're, you know, I'm not excusing them, but that line of dialogue, if they would have made it more about her insecurities about Maxie, maybe because she thought Maxie was thinner or whatever. But yeah, I mean, when Kirsten came on as Maxie, she did morph into a mean girl. You know, wasn't Maxie still in high school when Kirsten took over the role, though? I'm pretty sure she was. Let me look that up. I believe she was. She wasn't in, I don't think she was in college yet. Kirsten's.
I'm on the fence with that. I can't really remember. It was like borderline.
Because I know it was shocking, because I remember, you know, there was an outcry at the time of the little Robin person's, you know, she joined the show. When did she join the show? When did you join the show, sister girl? 2005. So that was 12 years ago. So I'm looking now. So, yeah, so.
It was borderline. Georgie was still in high school.
Yeah, see, I know Georgie was, but I think that Maxie, if I remember correctly, when Kirsten came on, started pursuing her fashion stuff.
Yeah, and then she was
that. Oh, no, that wasn't. No, she didn't start that fashion stuff in 2005. That took a minute. But, so in 2005, Kirsten Storms assumes the role of Maxie as the character faces complications with her heart transplant while in the hospital. So she came on with that Jesse Boudreaux story. So, yeah, so she was an adult. She was an adult by that time. So she wasn't in high school.
Maxie might not have been a mean girl in high school, but someone who's a badass woman is Sheila Carter on The Bold and the Beautiful. Jillian, how loud did you squeal when she returned? Because I'm pretty sure I heard it in North Dakota.
I don't squeal, baby. That's what you do.
Oh, okay.
No, I don't. I was like, okay, baby, I see you. I'm like, Martin fans will get what I mean by that. Oh my God, I thought that was great, and it was a good red herring, because I'm like, oh shit, Sheila shooting the shit out of Quinn, and then you find out that it's Deacon. I'm like, okay, B&B, that was badass there too. I just didn't like how, you know, they let Quinn off the hook per se, because, you know, Deacon was telling the truth. He was like, bitch, you pushed me off of a cliff. I have the right to be hot at your ass. And I'm like, true that. And then they just like brushed it, you know, just you know, swept it under the rug, so forth. But I liked it. That was a good little cliffhanger that B&B did. So go ahead.
One of the things that there have been a lot of complaints about prior to this was that Brad was just being lazy and wasn't really putting any effort into his show. But then all of a sudden, as he's done in the past, he turns on a dime, and we now have the summer of Sheila. She may not have been the one who pulled the trigger this time, but you can sure as well bet that she's up to something this summer. What was your reaction?
My reaction was complete and utter shock. And, you know, I've been blogging about daytime for a decade, so I haven't been shocked a lot in that decade. And prior to that, as just a soap fan, I hadn't been shocked that much. I think the last big shock I got was when Marlena was revealed to be the serial killer. That was like a, oh, what? But, you know, I don't really, you know, I knew about Tale of Two Tides. I knew about Philip coming back from the dead on Y&R. So I will say this, Brad Bell is the only showrunner in daytime who has managed to figure out how to keep a secret in the day of social media.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I read, I think it was in Michael Logan's interview with Kimberlyn, all of the steps that they took. Like, basically, she was quarantined to her dressing room and people had to bring her in and out food. Her, in the script, her name was Jane. You know, they did all of these clandestine things to
that
keep the secret.
School,
and I'm like, the first thing I thought beyond the story is, damn, if King Corday and Greg Ming are not going to have to do that at Days. Because Days tapes so far in advance, that's one thing. And I, you know, I'll say this and I'll go back to Bold. I struggle with Days' current strategy of revealing all of their big returns now. I get that they're trying to generate buzz because they know that people are tuning in to Dina staging an Our Town play with, you know, people she found at the mall on an island set. And that's just really hard to keep the buzz going about Days. So you kind of want to, you know, and there's kind of this belief, well, it's going to get out anyway. And look, hell, I'm the type of person who helps stuff like that get out. But I do think that, I mean, Game of Thrones tapes in advance, and we, you know, we didn't know until Jon Snow, I mean, we knew, but we didn't know for sure until Jon Snow popped up. So one thing, the other shows are going to have to figure out a way to take a page from if they want to have these type of surprises. And, you know, like, Days is bringing back Eileen Davidson and Sammy and, you know, Will. And to me, those are surprises that, you know, yeah, people like me, again, will try to figure out that kind of stuff. But, I mean, there should have been an effort to try to keep it, but you just can't, because the Days actors are tweeting stuff from set and they don't realize that there's a monitor behind them with somebody's face on it that's supposed to be dead. And, you know, they this has been for years that this, ever since they went to this new production model, this has been an issue. And you have, like, savvy, you know, bloggers like Jason's Days page that will take that, you know, seemingly innocuous screenshot of a script or something, and they will break down seven plot points that are coming, and then you're like, damn, they're right about this. And so you're like, maybe these shows need to look, I'm giving up game here, but maybe they need to stop letting people tweet from set and things like that, because, you know, I think Brad would have came down like Oz if somebody was tweeting about Kimberlyn Brown. I think it would have been like Professor X in the X-Men. He would have just swooped down from the booth on top of them. Like, just say it was Pearson. All Pearson would see is Brad in a mobilized car coming for his ass. Bam, knock him over. You know, but they managed.
At least the promo by the stars on Days is better than the actual official publicist for General Hospital who captured the wrong person on a photo.
You know what? No, that's a tale, because I'm sorry. Days publicist, look, I mean, Days publicist, I think the Days publicist acts like it's 1942 and, you know, they're waiting for Hedy to write some stuff. No, I think GH's publicity machine has been working overload. I mean, they get a lot of stuff wrong and goofy, but they have ramped it up, and I think that's good because they needed to for so long. Remember when we were complaining that they wouldn't tweet about the Emmys? But back to Sheila. I think that this is incredible.
What would you guys like to see happen this summer?
Yes, I am feeling that, you know, I have been saying that I'm tired of returns from the dead. But if you're going to do a return from the dead, damn it, make it a Sheila Carter. Make it the greatest soap supervillainess of all time. And I like how they are addressing what happened on YNR, yet not going into great detail.
Thank you, because that was my question. I'm watching it this week, and I'm like, they have not discussed the fact that she has a different face. Maybe I missed it.
No, yes, they have. They're being very subtle about it.
Well,
to
yeah,
not
she
have
said, like, I served my time.
No, Luke, you need to pay
tell
more.
Tell him, Jamie.
This is why people were there like, Jamie, be quiet. Jamie watches the details of the show. Jamie, let everybody talk. Well, this is actually what happened on the show. There have been multiple dialogue bits with people saying there were even rumors about identity change and, you know, there was rumors that she was dead. So they're treating it on the bold and the beautiful. And this, there were at least three or four mentions of this. So no, that was not the only thing that she said. You got to pay
attention. Well, no, I know that those other, I know that those other people, I know that those other people have said that, but I didn't, I don't remember her saying, addressing the fact that she has a different face.
It like it was a, like all of, they're basically shading in a way. They're actively.
I did get a sense of that. I did get a sense of that.
No, they're not doing the it never happened. They're acting like, oh, this was ludicrous. All these rumors of.
Yes, I definitely got that.
So they're making it seem like, you know, all of that so long sister killer and the Sheila having Michelle Stafford's face, you know, they're dismissing it like there were even these rumors of other identities and things like that. And, you know,
AKA
Sheila's like, poo-poo. You know,
a low key,
and
it never happened. That's a low key never happened.
You know, this is so exciting and it's great. Part of my, you know, of course, soap operas are soap operas, so you have to suspend your disbelief. But I'm like, girl, did you really think you were going to make amends with the Forresters? If you really were released and you want a new life, you know you couldn't come back to L.A. breaking in folks' houses talking about you want Katie to help you get a new life. But it's, you know, Brad is a plot-driven writer who still but he manages to understand his characters and the fan base. So, you know, it's funny because, you know, I don't even remember any real scenes with Sheila and Katie. So when she's all, you were always so nice and understanding and, you know, Eric values his friends. And I'm like, he wasn't friends with that little girl back in the day. She had pimples all over her face and was dressed up like a boy. He wasn't friends with that little girl. Y'all are trying to make this something that, you know, we get mad at GH for saying Maxie was a mean girl. Well, Katie Logan and Eric wasn't no hanging out and playing pinochle.
Well, I've always said that too, so nice.
Jillian?
Doing that back then, but I think that Brad said this is a soap-saving move. Everybody been talking about Spicy. You know, all of the magazines and the newspapers are like, will Sean Spicer kill Daytime? Will James Comey kill Daytime? Brad did a Ayanna Van Zant, slammed his hand down and said, not on my life!
Jillian, what do you think this means for Quinn? Do you think that Sheila will give her her comeuppance?
Child, this is going to be the battle of the crazy bitches. So I'm down for it. I mean, what you said, I wanted to piggyback what you said earlier, like, what, you know, what do we hope Sheila happens? I told Jamie offline, I hope it's a situation where, you know, because I'm like, why the hell did Sheila, now see, since you like to say we don't get on Brad, how I got on GH about the things, I said to myself, oh, bitch, how the hell you get in Katie's house in the first place? How do you know that's Katie's house? Like, what are you doing? So I'm like, probably find all that out. I'm hoping that Sheila has been stalking Eric. And I hope that she says that, you know, that while she was doing that, she's like, oh, Katie Logan is in for me to get in there with Eric because they cool. And that little heifer lived next door to him. And I hope she was trying to use Katie as a way to get rid of Quinn. And when I say that, I mean, like, for, you know, when Katie was getting irrational and pulled out her Glock on Quinn up at Forrester, I'm hoping that Sheila might have switched her medication for her heart and that's just playing reindeer games with her mind too.
They need to cut you a $35,000 check, because I guarantee they hadn't had that plot twist, but they'll write it in now. No, they just made, I bet
do
you they
it,
just,
do it.
They just made Katie crazy to justify, you know, Brad will do some plot driven stuff to justify.
And see, this is why when Luke said, you know, when Luke said that eloquently, like, you know, Brad can change things on a dime. This is what pisses me off about him. It's because you know he can do it. He just gets like,
why do you need to keep doing it on the dime? Why do you need, why do you go through such lengthy? Because unlike everybody else in this game that gets way more flack than Brad Bell, he has autonomy. Brad can do what he wants, really. So the fact that Bold can become, I mean, I just have to be real here. Bold can be really shitty for long stretches of time, and there's no, unlike with these other shows where you have to do where in the world is Carmen San Diego and ask Nancy Drew to figure out who's zooming who, and well, did Nathan do that? Did Gene want to do that? Did this one? Did Ken Corday really want to do that? Was it this writer? Was it that writer? We know unequivocally who is doing everything. At the buck stops with Brad. So yeah. The fact that, you know, which, yes, Brad deserves a cookie, some Dom Perignon and everything this week. But I'm just saying he needs to be, Bold needs to be like this all the time. There should not be stretches right. of the show where that little newbie girl, Spectra girl, is running around with a big old amulet on her, around her neck, running around talking about, I don't know, this is a camera. You know, last shouldn't year, miss that. When you can do this, when you can do, and last you need year, to treat every character like it's Sheila Carter. Not make everybody crazy. You don't have to wait for a muse. You know what I'm saying? Shows are on the air need to be your muse. So you need to write every character like you wrote Sheila. I'm preaching here. Like you wrote Sheila and Deacon and Quinn and Eric. Which Eric was just pretty much the George Burns to all of the Graces. But, you know, you need to write every story like this. Don't be like, this week I'm going to write that to the girl with an amulet on her neck.
And last year he did that. Last year this time he did that with Nicole being pregnant and Julius. And Maya, he did all that. Like, last year it
just
was
okay. Don't give yourself a chance to be, you know, pedestrian and lazy. Don't, because I get super excited, and maybe that's the method to Brad's madness. Oh, I'm gonna lull them into complacency and make them mad at me and make them call me a hack, and then boom, I'm gonna bring back Sheila Carter on that ass.
No,
so maybe that's part of his science. Because look, one thing that I do want to say about that. The reason that there's maximum impact with this is because it was Kimberlyn Brown and Sean Kanan. Days of Our Lives.
The originals.
Days of Our Lives. I'm going to tell y'all something because I love y'all. And also, even, you know, I know people are like, he never criticizes Ron. Well, Ron ain't here yet. Ron isn't on the screen yet. But Dina did something that Ron did a lot at GH, which was bring back iconic characters with new faces, you know, with new people in the role. And I'm going to be real. If it's not the real Paul Satterfield, there's no point of bringing him back. I don't understand that. I don't understand that whole need. If it's not the real Frank Smith, what's the point of bringing him back? And, you know, so there, everybody, mark it down. I'm criticizing Ron, even though this Ron didn't do this, but it leads into this. Angelica Devereaux is one of my all-time favorite soap characters.
Ooh, tell it, sister. Tell it.
Here we go.
Absolutely nothing by watching Sidney Chase pretend to be Angelica Devereaux. I don't understand. That role has been recast several times, but there's a difference in a character having a recast trajectory that is consistent. Like, you know, it starts in 1989 and then that character, you know, Jane Elliott leaves, so they bring on this one and then they bring on Judith Chapman in a row. That's different than me wanting to give a damn about Angelica Devereaux's iconic return 25,
oh, Lord.
All these years later, and she looks nothing like she looked before, and it's like the only reason I know she's Angelica Devereaux is because Patch says, Angelica
Devereaux. Like, yeah, that was so lackluster. Type of
returns fall completely flat because, number one, she looks nothing like the previous two. I mean, there was a blonde Angelica, to be fair, but nobody remembers her. You either remember Jane.
She was in the middle. She was. Judith. I think she was on. I think she ended up going.
She was
another world.
She was just a temp. I don't remember her, but I didn't like her. But it's like, I'm gonna be real, because you know we used to talk about this when she was first on YNR, and Luke had fallen head over heels in love with her with Lucy on Charlie Brown hearts in his eyes, like when she used to see Schroeder,
oh,
whatever he
first got Judith.
And I was like, look, I don't like her on YNR at that point. I like her now, because now she's playing Angelica Devereaux over there. So I don't understand, considering Judith is on recurring on YNR. Wally Kurth is on recurring, and he appears on both shows. Why
Eileen
not
Davidson is doing both shows.
Why not just ask Judith Chapman?
Patrika Darbo is also
Patrika
doing
Patrika is on. Look, Patrika is like, I'm on this show, that show, the web show. I'm on every show. I'm on the Bay.
As well she should be. As well she should be.
I'm on Edge of Night. I'm on Search for Tomorrow.
Jay Bernard. Get that back.
That signal's out.
Patrika Darbo is taking a web version of The Secret Storm as we speak. She is working, do you hear me? But I don't understand why they couldn't get Judith Chapman
to play
Devereaux, especially since it's a brief stint. I just don't understand the need of Morgan Fairchild in this role. You can't play any flashbacks. Yeah, she wasn't good, bless her heart. But you can't.
I'm gonna be real. She was horrible.
Such juicy flashbacks, because Angelica used to use that baby against Adrian. Well, you know, back to Adrian was. You know, the story pretty much was. You know, when Justin married Adrian. You know, Adrian. You know, her father had raped her. And, you know, Judy Evans played that same story on two shows and made it do what it did. Because, you know, her daddy bothered her.
Yeah, her stepfather.
Yeah, he raised her nasty self. And then, you know, her daddy bothered her on Days of Our Lives. And, you know, so she was kind of, you know.
Frigid.
There was some, well, you know, I hate that term, but it was so bandied about back then. And, you know, and then Angelica was like, she was a cougar before they started using that term. And, you know, she put some on young Justin.
She busted wide open for Justin. Justin was like,
with Adrian like a cat would a rat. You know, she would toy with her about, you know, how Justin was with her in bed and how they had, she gave Justin the first, because, you know, Victor had no children on the show. We knew Bo was his child, but I believe that was during some of that time when Bo and Hope were sailing around on the fancy butt all across the oceans and stuff. And Victor saw Justin as his heir, and Victor was obsessed with Alexander because he was, you know, and they used to use this term, and I'm like, do rich white people really use this term? They used to call him the grandnephew, and he would always call, you know, they would refer to Victor as his granduncle, and I'm like, we say great uncle in the South, but okay. But, you know, granduncle.
So
it was like he was really invested in that baby, too, and there was, you know, it was that typical story of Victor Kyriakos wanting that baby because he was the heir, and, you know, Angelica was like, sometimes Victor's partner in crime, but then sometimes they were at war, and then plus she had that bitchy relationship with her stepson, Jack. Hello, Angelica. You know, I mean, it was just so good, and I don't have any, if you do something like this, it's supposed to be for fans like me who watched the original story so that we can get the feels of it.
And that's part of the reason that Sheila's return worked so well, yes, because they went back and did all those clips. It was fantastic.
I'm going to tell you when I shouted, though. When what was the realization? No, when Katie texted it, when she texted it to Eric. Although I have to say that proves Katie and Eric ain't no real friends, because it was another scene of him talking to Quinn before he got over there. That he's still Sheila Carter. If she's the one over at, I'm like, Eric, you know what Sheila is capable of. You can explain that to Quinn later. You know, rub some big salves on your chest to get buff and strong and get over there and try to whoop Sheila.
Yeah.
Katie, he all explained it to her. And also, I'm like, Bogle have to remember who Quinn is, because I'm going to need Quinn to pull out her Wonder Woman sword and remind these other women, you're not going to pull no guns and stuff on me.
Yes.
Your ass with my sword anyway, because I'm crazy too.
I mean,
Quinn to be like,
I think that's why Bill was like, when they were like, when Wyatt's like, someone's trying to kill my mom, and Bill and Liam were like, you mean,
yeah, you don't
have to write
exactly.
Her.
They had Bill deliver that one.
Yeah, Phyllis on INR when they did the whole stupid Two-Face story. But one of the best scenes was when Phyllis let Sheila know. Bitch, I ain't no slacker now. You know, ask everybody about my friend Sasha.
Ask about me.
Jamie, I was going to ask you, I know that they're trying to keep it under wraps, but have you heard any tea about what Eileen or who Eileen is going to be playing on Days?
I do not know.
That Ron is going to write the hell out of.
Oh, that is guaranteed.
This is Ron Carlovati. I have no intel, but...
I was on vacation, and the moment I saw that headline come across Twitter about Eileen Davidson going to Days, I was like, Ron is going to write the fuck out of her. And that was all I had to know.
The other regimes have been very conservative in... Well, they'll have her playing Sheila. They'll have her playing Kristen and Susan, or Susan. But... this is Ron. So, you know, Ron, when he went
Ron
to
Ron will have her doing all eight of them, like Tess, Bess, Wes, Bess, I mean, everything.
I'm going to tell you what happened. Ron read that Bible, and he was like, stupid.
He took his highlighter and highlighted everything that had to do with that character. And then he put big stars in magic marker beside it.
I know you probably do that. He probably was like, let me look up. He was like, Eileen, play 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. He was like, oh, shit, bitch. He probably called her and said, hey, sis.
And then, forget the magic marker and all that, Luke. No, Ron rolled his sleeves up, cracked his neck, and said,
oh. And he rolled his neck like the black woman, the inner black woman we know he has.
He is like, I'ma show y'all. Oh, she played...
The dude,
I'ma have her playing all these people, the dude and Dr. Tom Horton. How about that?
She gonna be playing the cooker, the baker, the butcher, the baker,
candlestick maker.
If you make me mad, I'm like, damn. No.
Whoever produced the Days promos during Riley, if they could find that cat, because this new one needs.
Oh, the Days promo person has been terrible for years.
V8. He's all, but I think he does a lot of stuff for NBC Primetime too.
Yeah, he
but
does. He does. He does.
To NBC find Primetime. That cat who used to do the Riley promos for Ron, because if you had that man, I will say those promos really helped excite me about the show. You know, if you had that marriage of crazy, batshit crazy stories, and those one woman will return to Salem this week and change everything forever, instead of this week on Days of Our Lives, these vapid little
because he ain't used to that. Because he ain't used to that. Because I was kind of.
You know for a fact that if Ron sees a boring promo for his Eileen Davidson return, he's gonna chuck an Emmy at somebody.
No, I don't think he's gonna do
I'm
all that.
I'm joking.
He's not looking Wyndham now. Come on. But I'll go back to Bold because we did get called out on how we gloss over Bold. So back to Bold. I want to do, and I'm going to do a wishful casting this week because I think they should I think that they need to put Kimberlyn on full contract. I'm talking a long-term contract and build a dynasty under her because we do know that Sheila has 4 children. She has Erica Lovejoy / Mary with M. Buchanan and James Warwick. So look at here. Go on and bring James Warwick back because, you know, he the only one who can get Sheila mine right after she goes crazy. And with Quinn there, look, he'll have so many billable hours. They need to bring Dr. Taylor Hayes back, even if it's only for a drive-by. You know, she popped
you
Taylor.
You just made Smitty Titties go hard, boy.
After bring back all of the... Make this... Do what GH did with their 50th. Make this... Run this Sheila thing till the wheels go off. Tim, remember Tim? Is he still alive? Tim, the psychiatrist. No, that was Phyllis's. Now, hers was, you know, I'm confusing them. Hers was the Mike. Wasn't Mike the guy she sicked them killer bees on? Who did she sick the killer bees on? Y'all gonna have to refresh my memory.
Oh, my God.
Who did Sheila sick them killer bees on, Google? Who did, look, I'm gonna write that as a question. Who did Sheila?
Oh, my God.
Oh, dear God.
Sick them killer bees.
Side on? Note. Side note. I'm like,
you know, Amber was part of the Sheila bit. The beat. What was that cat's name? Was it? Who did Sheila and them killer?
That side note. Remember. They had Katie. You know what Deacon was? Katie was like, "You setting me up, Deacon," and he was like, "Yo, I would never do that to you. You were always good to me." And then he's like, "You live in that big house, girl. You seeing anybody else?" Deacon.
Yeah, they need. This is the time when this show can really. And I'm going to be honest, they need to do some cutting because a lot of the people that they brought on didn't work. Sally works. Patrika Darbo works. We don't need that little girl. We don't need Sally's little sister. I'm going to be honest. I wanted RJ home, but he is Alex P. Keaton meets my tax man. He can go. That little baby, RJ, until y'all can, if first you don't succeed, dust yourself off and try again next summer. That he is the equivalent of that Drew Tyler Bell Thomas. Ooh, he can go. So RJ can go. We can
get rid of all them.
Well, Darlita can be the secretary as long as she ain't recurring and don't never get a story, you know. But they need to do some strategic cutting so that they can bring back some, you know, because we need to have, and you know, I don't even think it needs all that cutting because I'm going to have to throw my other show in here. Emma Dale has 40 characters. It's a half-hour show. You might as well get you some get right, because I'm going to be talking about shows that are doing it right. 7 million people. So they need to benchmark from some stories that are doing right. They got 40 characters on that show, and they can rotate them in and out. They need an arc with all of Sheila's best hits. Taylor need to come back. Oh, my God. Sheila is up in her stuff. I'm going to shrink everybody. Dr. James Warwick need to be back. Amber.
It would be kind of cool for Taylor to come back, though, and Brooke and Bill are kissing, and she'd be like, well, you did it to your sister yet again, bitch. Yeah.
Weigh in on so many different stories. They need to. I want some of Sheila's kids. I don't know which ones, but, you know, they have Mary. They have the one with Massimo. They have, of course, Ryder and Daisy. But I would recast Daisy, of course, if they brought her on. But the thing is, you can bring on Erica Lovejoy / Mary because she was obsessed with Rick. So, you know, Chrishell Stouse, I did not know this about Chrishell, but Chrishell is a hardcore Sheila Carter stan. And she, when she
shut up, no way!
Chrishell was on there spouting knowledge. She was, the fans were talking about it, and she was like, oh, look at her. She's a bombshell. She's dating a cute boy. Dude, he's a grown man. I'm sorry, but I always think him as young.
She's engaged.
There you go. He put a ring on it. Bring Chrishell back bold. Look at her. Y'all will get all this buzz in the media because, you know, every time she and Justin go to the Kentucky Derby, they can be like, Justin Hartley and his beautiful fiance.
Yes, and her versus
Steffi would be fun.
Yeah, and bring her on as Erica Lovejoy. Still in love with Erica.
Steffi, I'm just going to be real here. No shade against old girl playing Steffi, but Chrishell, eat that girl's lunch. That ain't even a fair fight.
So bring on her. Bring back Erica Lovejoy. And then, you know, also bring back that child Sheila has with Massimo. Because here's another big story that show could do that would be great. Kill Massimo. Joe Mascolo is dead. There's this whole, I'm so over all these grown-ass people with their own trust funds. I'm so thankful Thomas is like, you know what? I'm good. I'm going to go work somewhere else and invest money over here and build my own thing. Whenever Eric inevitably finds out that Ridge has been dry humping his bride, because that's all they've been doing. I mean, they're so tepid now on both.
I know.
Ridge would have screwed Quinn up one side and down the other, but now these 50-year-old people are dry humping each other and grinding on each other like two 12-year-olds at a sleepaway camp. I don't know what y'all did on sleepaway camp, but you know, that's what they're doing. They finally have Ridge penetrate her, and Eric is like, how can you do this to me? How can you do this? You're out of Forrester Creations. That's when we need to learn, you know, you're dead to me. You know, make it dramatic. You are no son of mine. And then the next
Maroney.
Day, Ridge finds out that, yeah, Eric, say all that. You're Massimo's son. Massimo is the type of person who doesn't care about anything and blah, 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 blah. Ah! You know, let Jabba do his good old school.
What are you going to do at the end?
Hollywood, bitches.
And no, then, what are you going to do at the end?
And he's ready to write a sonnet, and he gets an email from Nick, who's in a period piece on Hallmark. Yo, bro, dad done dropped. Half of the fortune goes to you. You know, Sheila's on the show, and Sheila's struggling with money, maybe. Ain't nobody trying to hire a nurse who's tried to kill everybody. Imagine that. See, the Sinai is like, yeah, we good. We good. We don't need no help over here. No, we can't have you in the maternity wig, Sheila. And then Massimo dies. He splits the fortune between
three
Nick
ways.
And Reed. Not three ways. Two.
Oh, yeah.
Shows up with her baby, her daughter. So Chrishell is playing the oldest one. Who we gonna have play Massimo's girl with she? Who we gonna cast?
I got it.
Your favorite from One Life to Live.
Kelly Massal. So she can fuck it up. That's what she likes to say.
No, they slept on Kelly Massal. She got a pilot. I told them and told them. No, and one of her pilot got picked up. I've been telling Daytime to cast Kelly Massal, and they didn't cast her. And
Whitney
she got
Underwood?
A So who
Brittany
could
Underwood could do good.
Brittany Underwood can be that baby. What is that baby's name?
She named it like Alora, Araya, something stupid. I was like, shut up, Sheila.
Okay, so unnamed boy son. Oh, that's the one that died. Okay, Mary Warwick, that's Erica Lovejoy. Diana, the child's name is Diana.
Diana, oh, la.
Carter can be Brittany Underwood or... Who else? People don't like this girl, and if I say this, I'm gonna get mad comments. I don't know why y'all don't like that girl, but little Alderson could do it.
Kirsten Alderson, yeah,
she'd be good. But didn't she go back to the East Coast?
Yeah, she did.
Bring back little Kirsten Alderson as. You know, bring her. So bring, you know, Chrishell Stouse is Erica Love. And then.
No, Farrah needs to take her ass to Dave.
Is the Diana Carter. And we'll just leave Ryder and Daisy in the YNR universe. Bring
yes.
back.
Clarence this Carter, this is where we enter a realm that I know. This is like Fox and Marvel Comics. There's certain characters that should stay at YNR, and there's certain characters that should stay at Disney.
Well, you know, you give Disney. It to Marvel and DC. This is
what no, I'm talking about Marvel because Disney owns like the Avengers and the Iron Mans, but Fox owns the X-Men.
I'm gonna bring it back to the soaps because that's what Knott's Landing did when Dallas brought Bobby back from the dead. You know, they were in the same universe until that point, and then the people at Knott's were like, "You mean to tell us we tried to help support y'all storyline and we had Gary react to Bobby dying on our show and we had Val name the baby Bobby after him. They left Bobby ass dead on Knott's Landing." They did not do the whole "this season was a dream" on Knott's Landing too. They were like, "From this point, you know, we are parting ways. Henceforth and now and forever, these shows are in separate universes until the new Dallas when they brought them back on there." But yeah, I mean, I don't like that. I don't want, because the other thing about the Sheila Carter thing that they need to do is they need to redeem that LA crossover, that LA story that YNR just did that was regrettable. They need to do a monster crossover event. I'm talking, you know, and I got to give Brian Franz credit because the last kick-ass monster crossover event was Brian Franz's idea. And that is when Babe Carey children used her One Life to Live brother to steal All My Children's Bianca Montgomery's baby. That was a badass.
For a moment, I thought you were going to go to the Linda Dano crossover.
I liked that one too.
No, I liked it too, but I didn't consider it monster, so I wasn't sure where you were going.
No.
Baby Switch was off the chain.
Yes, it was. Absolutely.
From what I hear, that was Brian Franz's idea. They need to get together, all of the seven cooks at Y&R and the one cook at Bo need to get together and have a meeting and strategize the most epic crossover event ever.
You don't feel as though that they're trying to do that because
I already know because I've already started snooping and it's like, no.
Nope. I was going to say, because, you know, they had them mention Sheila on Y&R, so I'm like,
that may just be writers slipping it in.
I think that's just writers who actually know that history and know that Lauren would be troubled by the fact that Lauren would be troubled that because Sharon, you know, knew that she had somebody else's baby. And so that is, you know, I think that's just good characterization on that part of that show. But no, since that did happen, there needs to be a monster, because let's be real. These shows are still in the same universe, because Eric just came to Genoa City last year or earlier this year to help Lauren in her negotiations with Jack.
Yeah,
so lame.
So, well, yeah, I didn't think it was lame. I thought it was okay. It wasn't great. But I do know if Eric is still supposed to be that tight with Lauren, she already got a text. You know what I'm saying? She already would have gotten a text.
Not necessarily. You pointed out how long it took Eric to respond to Katie.
Yeah,
he might not have texted Lauren.
Look, if Lauren is looking on MSN or whatever, you know, there's got to be a news bulletin, you know, because think about it. If Ralph Lauren's
she
crazy,
she won't find out until the Spencer Publication magazine comes out.
If Ralph Lauren's crazy ex-wife who shot his daughter-in-law and threatened his grandchild and all the other stuff that Sheila did came back from the dead and was arrested, I think MSN would write a piece about that. So I think Lauren should be, you know, the way that it should start off should be innocent. You know, Lauren should be at the athletic club with Michael. Michael talking about, I got to stop Rosalind.
Dumbass.
Juliet, Rosalind, Mercutio, whichever one of them she is, from Sue and Cade. And Lauren is like looking at her phone. That's nice, dear. And then she get a news alert. And Lauren be like, I got to go.
Speaking of Lauren.
That bitch is back and I got to whoop her ass again.
She hops on the private jet. But I have a question. Speaking of Lauren, because I just
Lauren got
this
private jet no more. She had
that's what I'm. That's what I'm getting to. That's what I'm getting to. Is it just me, or is the fact that like once she did the whole thing with Fenmore's, we just haven't seen her, and she's like, I do not understand what Tracy Bregman and Lauren have to do.
You've been blogging for 10 years. She's over 50, and these shows do this all the time. I hate it. It's, you know, it's as annoying as the world, but that's what they do on these shows. I'm fighting for you to talk some sense,
and this is what you bring up, Luke.
I'm using this as a segue. I'm not going to be staying on long.
They're doing it on Y&R now. Y&R used to be immune to this. You know, Brian Franz will do this in a minute. You get 50, you got to go. You know, but they're doing the Brian Franz thing, which is, when we bring on your child, that should be like, on some shows, it's like, oh, we're getting a family for you. That's a good thing. When it used to be with Brian Franz, the moment they sore ass Lulu, Laura was, we're going to have you drooling and boo-boo. We're going to lock your ass up in a basement somewhere. You know, Lauren got a grown-ass son and Lauren got Ghost. You know, that's what they did on that. I don't know. I know that there are budget issues, you know, Y&R was immune to a lot of that for so long. But, you know, with Greg Rickard leaving, they're having to, like, struggle to figure out how. But, you know, Tracy's on recurring. So that's, you know, the recurring budget is different.
I can tell them how to free that budget up.
Yeah, we can free up a whole lot of things on The Young and the Restless.
They need to do a multi-soap event where Lauren, Fenmore, the key players in the Sheila story descend upon L.A. Lauren Fenmore, Phyllis Romolotti, Paul, Michael, Scotty, and then it's like you know, we're going to have to get Scotty a V8 because he can't be on monotone when he
reads. I'm pretty sure Sheila would be like, Sheila probably apologize for stealing that old man.
All you have to do is a lecture about journalism or about what to do at funerals. Like I wanted to punch him at Chloe's funeral. I wanted to reach through my TV and punch him when he's lecturing
Chloe's
people.
Chloe's not dead.
He's sitting there, people trying to grieve, but Esther don't know her baby ain't dead. And he all sitting around. You know, studies show they do this in every culture. People gather together after they're dead, and somebody should have just pushed him right there. Mariah should have just mid-sentence while he giving that damn Fraser
like, crunch. You want to join, Chloe? You want to join in that box? Shut the fuck up.
I'm sorry, Esther, just a minute. I'm going to take care of something for you. And while he over there boring everybody in the room, Cliff Clavin, she should have just punched him in the mouth. Shut up! Will you shut up?
Jillian, I wanted to ask you about something. What are you thinking of Ashley's investigation of Graham? Do you think they have chemistry? Would you like to see more of them? Or do you think this is a storyline we're going to see where we're going to find out he has some sort of convoluted motives?
He's a porn star.
What?
He's like somebody from a daddy porn site. Get him off my TV. Nobody wants to see that.
I see what Weiner's trying to do, and I don't know whose idea is this. Is this a writer? Is this the network or whatever? But you notice they keep pushing this Graham agenda, which is fine because we need to know what Graham punk ass doing to Big Mama. They're pushing this Graham agenda, but you're barely seeing Ravi. I'm like, what y'all trying to do? Y'all trying
to
fade?
Why wasn't it Robert Newman if you wanted... Make it somebody with some oomph. They're going to care.
And what is the deal? Like, you know, like, y'all trying to stop Ashley from getting her back cracked from that young buck? Like, come on now.
Robin will never see Ashley Abbott's vagine.
Nope.
He's not going to get to see her vagine.
He's never going to be able to test her chemistry in the lab.
He's never
going to
get it. Never
going to
get it.
Never going to
get it. Never going to get it. Whoa. He ain't going to get it. I mean,
For the podcast. Never going to get it. Whoa.
I mean, well, Luke, that's new to you, but everybody.
No, I'm not saying. Listen, in 10 years of plus of podcasting, that doesn't have to be new to me.
I was actually aping the Jamie Foxx version with In Living Color. I saw you, Luke. On a side note, I saw you playing Janet Jackson. I almost cried.
I was not playing Janet Jackson. I was at a club where it was being played.
Is this on video?
So why was it on your Twitter when that happened?
Because I Shazammed it.
It's on video?
It's an app.
That's some worship and stuff.
Oh, no, it's an app where you basically, like, you can do it for the songs that are being played. It pulls them up.
So you at a club. You're supposed to be out there dropping your funk like it's hot.
This white boy can't dance. This white boy can't dance. That's just how it is.
Don't you tweet no dance. That's pathetic. You tweet the song from the club. Get your ass out there and go wobbly wobbly. Shake it like it's hot. Shake it. Wobble, 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 wobble.
Listen, I'm not a big Janet Jackson fan, but the ones that, like, there are some that I enjoy, and those just happen to be a couple of them. Before we wrap this podcast,
I want you in the middle of the flow with your ass in the air. Talk about whoop.
No, Jamie, you know good and well that is never going to happen. Before we wrap this podcast up, in honor of Father's Day, I'd asked our listeners which soap dads that they most enjoyed on their soap. So here are a few of the responses. Sabrina Firminger replied, John Abbott and Roger Thorpe. Both men were wholly dedicated to their kids, although Dodger's love was toxic, but it was love nonetheless.
Roger.
I'm reading what she has
she
here.
She said Dodger because he was Roger the Dodger. That was his nickname.
But she goes, but love nonetheless. Enrique Buenrostro, I apologize for mispronouncing it. Favorite soap dads, Holden Snyder, Adam Chandler, Edward Quartermain, Alan Spaulding, Patch, John Abbott, and Bo Buchanan. Jamie James replied, John Black, that's a fact. John Abbott came up again by SoapFan83. And then Lehigh Girls Rock replied, Patrick Drake. Enrique covered a couple of mine, Adam Chandler and Edward Quartermain. I also thought that Jack Snyder, I loved him as a dad on As the World Turns. And then John J. York on General Hospital, his character, is always one of my favorite dads. Jillian, who is your favorite?
He's a dad in the hood that he don't never, a DNA test don't never go his way.
Listen,
he's stuck raising all kids.
Biology does not necessarily make you define what is a dad. Jillian, do you have a favorite
schmuck.
Soap dad?
He's a cuckold. That's your favorite cuckold. Back. Felicia brought that straight home talking about Maxie was sick.
Listen, I'm trying to talk about Father's Day and you are talking about cuckolds.
She cuckolded him and then took off with Luke and left him with them girls.
Jamie, did you have a favorite soap dad?
Felicia ain't no joke. My favorite soap dad is Dr. Tom Horton because I just wanted to be in his house with his wife making me some donuts. You just
Steve Hardy
so
was good. Steve Hardy
now,
was
that's
good.
That's my favorite. And, you know, and I also love Matt Corey because, look, Matt was another one who raised
Jake. Jake on Another World. And Ryan.
Jake wasn't my favorite. Jake died after his chillings. He didn't get to have his chillings long before they was dead. Jake was dead.
But for the same as Mac on General Hospital, Jake ended up being a father figure for Vicky's
Jake
kids.
Graham told me to tell you he is Steven's father, and Grant is that other boy's daddy.
Now, as much as I like Grant, I can't say he's a good dad.
No, I'm going to tell you, Roger Thorpe, whoever said that, that is on the money because he loved him some Chrissy. And
yes.
He just cost Chrissy so much because society blamed her. Look, Alexander didn't want to give Chrissy jobs. Told her, I don't know if I should let you back in Spalding considering you're Roger Thorpe's daughter. You know, Matt Corey was a great dad.
And a crybaby.
You shut up. Dads that I love.
Good one.
CC Capwell, obviously, and I believe he is the most prolific father in daytime because CC had all kind of kids with all kind of women. He and Asa might run each other a good race.
I'm afraid to ask this question. I'm really afraid. But do you have a favorite father on Emmerdale?
Oh, God.
On Emmerdale, let me see. Who's my favorite father on Emmerdale? Well, that's a sore spot right now because they just gave one of my gays a baby. And I'm like Scarlett O'Hara with that baby. I hate you and your baby. So, but no. Patty, he's another like, he's not like a Mac. But Patty, to mine, I don't know if Patty has
anybody. You're pop like Mac?
No, but Patty basically is Aaron Dingle's father figure. He's not his father because Aaron's real father molested him as a child and was sent to prison for raping him. And so Patty is like my favorite character on the show's surrogate daddy. Look, Aaron Dingle is like so dreamy. He's like my gay husband. And so that's his father figure. Patty! And they all talk like this. I just want to go to England where everyone talks like this. But I also like Ashley. But Ashley died of the dementia. Emmerdale is that show that you can't. I guess that's just a European type show thing. It's almost like Game of Thrones where you just can't get really, you know, you can't be all like, ooh, I'm going to fall in love with this character because they might get got.
Can you imagine what they would do with the soap, American soap fans over couples? Can you imagine a Cain and Lily situation
yeah, this is the thing. And Emmerdale fans get just as mad because they have a story right now where Pete, who is dating Layla, you know, Pete is, he owns a taxi cab company with his brothers, but he's also selling pot on the side. So of course we'd never see that on these damn shows because the networks and the sponsors and the holographers would be, ooh! But he and his brothers have recently started a pot business on the side. But Pete is dating Layla, who is a wedding planner, and Layla is best friends with Priya, who her family owns the big chocolate company, the candy company that everybody, the poor people in town I work for. So Priya is like this gorgeous you know, Indian British chick. And so Priya's husband, Rakesh and stuff, he burned down this house that caused Nicola to almost be crippled. And Nicola found out and blackmailed him and stuff. And so all that shit came out. So Rakesh is on the run. He tried to break into the house where the whites live. That's the wealthy family on there. And he beat up the little sex pervert heir to the white family and stole some of their money and ran off. So, but Priya... when her shit with Rakesh started going bad, Priya hunched Pete. And Priya and Layla are best friends. Now, see, it's a juicy-ass story because when Priya's marriage fell apart, Layla was like, you're going to move in with us. And Priya's like, no. You know, she's looking at Pete. I really shouldn't. No, I insist. Pete and I want you to move in with us. And Pete is like, oh, hell, you bringing my hoe in here. And so Layla has no idea that her best friend and her man done hunched, and she got this girl living in her house. When is the last time Daytime has done anything like that? Whenever we get, and Emmerdale does it all the time. A few months ago, Dan's girlfriend cheated on him with one of the, with Pete's brother. Pete's brother, those three boys are all like the, like, bad boys, except the little gay one. You know, he just really don't have a storyline. But, so some things are just like in America. But, so what was I saying? So they did the same story. Dan's woman cheated on him with a one-night stand, and that broke up their relationship. We don't have stuff like that on these shows. If Kane cheats on Lily, he has to be drunk out of his mind. If somebody on a U.S. daytime soap cheats, it's because they believe that their real spouses went down in a plane crash, so they have grief sex with the other spouse. Or Dante cheats on Lulu because he thinks Lulu is cheating on him with Robert Palmer Watkins, but they're really just going to save Lucky and fight the WSB or the USB or USB port or whatever. We never can just have people on US daytime that just go, you know what? My dick is hard and my woman ain't here right now and I'm going to screw her and regret it. We used to have that. US daytime invented that. I mean, As the World Turned started with, you know, Bob Hughes's Annie was hoeing around with Mr. Lowell. You know, that was in the 50s. They had a woman, an unmarried woman, sleeping with her brother's law partner who was married. And her brother and sister-in-law were good friends with the Lowells. And the unmarried sister was screwing that woman's husband. Because that is always good drama. You can mine from adultery, avarice, these normal human emotions and behaviors. Bold used to be great about it, but now instead of Ridge having a torrid affair with Quinn, they've just been going around heavy petting like teenagers. And I'm like, why? Grown people don't heavy pet. When you Ridge's age and you done paid for a Viagra prescription and you get a dick hard, you ain't trying to be grinding on Quinn because you don't know when that's coming back the next time. So you finna do something. It ain't like you ain't done it to your daddy before with women he actually loved more. So why are you being so, oh, let's go in here and grind on my daybed and my
yeah.
It's like, why aren't there more affairs? Why? I would love for, I mean, well, Lauren Finmore cheated on Michael with
Carmine,
and he went crazy. Lily cheated on Kane with Pretty Boy, Joe Clark. Yeah. And then he went crazy. So it's always this, you know, on Emmerdale, they don't go crazy. They cheat with people's best friends. Like, yeah, I mean, when Dan's girlfriend cheated on him, it was his best friend who worked with him at the mechanic shop. That's what happens in real life. I'm from a small town. I know this. It'll be people sitting right in the same church with each other on the same... And it'll be a woman who is sleeping with that other woman's husband and be yelling louder than anybody else when the pastor is talking. That soap opera, it's Peyton Place. You go back to what made soap opera, and you don't have to be so beholden.
I know somebody
from the dead. You just have people to be hoish again.
I know somebody who back home. I know somebody who got pregnant with her friend's, you know, ex-boyfriend and tried to pass it off as, She went to a sperm bank for that baby. I'm like, that was just, a scam.
You got to tell story, and you can't be worried about cases. Because, look, I love Robert and Aaron. So when Robert cheated on Aaron when he was in prison, the fanboy in me was like, no, you cheated with the girl. But unlike U.S. daytime soaps, they have always said Robert was bisexual. And he's an established pig. So, yes, he loves Aaron, but his basic nature is, and plus Aaron was on drugs in prison, and he was pushing Robert away, and Bex was there. And so that's life. That's what people do. On daytime, it would have been all sorts of focus group meetings. We can't do this to this couple because they're popular. And that's what's killing the genre, this fear. I'm going to tell you right now what would set YNR on fire and get mainstream press talking. If Michael is, like, pretending like he's working late a lot, and Lauren is like, what's going on with Michael? And on a Friday tag, we see Michael walk in Graham's hotel room. Honey, ooh, Child of America. That's a soap opera right there. But they're not going to do that because they're scared. That's a soap opera. They're scared, though, of the Michael and Likey fans being like, we live vicariously through this. And we're mad because they like our mom and daddy. No. You tell a damn soap opera. You tell a story. Remember how much Lauren used to screw and hunch back in the day?
And that would be, you know what? That would be good because can you imagine Lauren being like, he cheated on me with a man. And for people to be like, you know, for some people to be like, I can't believe it. But someone to be like, why are you surprised that he cheated on you? Why is it because he cheated on you with a man? You think you all that, like, for them to be like, sexuality is fluid or
that
whatever.
Is what,
you know?
When people are like, why were you so obsessed with Emmerdale? That is how that story started. Rob Ron is their number one couple now. When their coupledom started, Robert was with a woman. He cheated on his fiance, Chrissy White, who Luke Kerr would love Chrissy White because she's
She's the one that was killed, right?
No, she's alive. No. Oh. That was her friend who was trying to tell her that them boys was hunching, and she got because she was being nosy. Quit trying to out people, Perez Hilton. So she fell through that damn roof. But and then, you know, Robert is like, he is like a British Robert. He's like a British Roger Thorpe. Not in terms of acting, because Michael Zaslow, in my opinion, was one of the best to ever do it. But Roger was just a shameless cad. We know, the rape of Holly was one thing, but he was just always doing the wrong thing. He marries he marries Alexandra Spalding because he's such a social climber and he wants that Spalding money and power. And then he sleeps with Melinda Lewis. And that's Lewis's little princess. And, you know, Mindy gets the full Scarlet Letter treatment after Alexandra outs them at the country club. We don't have those moments because since the year 2000, pretty much, if that would have happened in 2000, Alex would have, her plane would have had to go down and she'd be presumed dead for Roger to sleep with Mindy. It's always something plot driven and contrived because no one wants to just let some, I don't know why. It's like, why do you think people can't cheat in, you know, with full knowledge of Ed Bauer? He didn't think Maureen was dead when he slept with Lillian. He just hunched her because they had been working together on her breast cancer. He had been supporting her and, you know, they caught feelings and they hunched. And then when Mo found out, she confronted their asses and went out on that highway and she died. Mo Bauer died.
Well, so that was under Jill Farrah.
You don't have to kill him. But I will say, Jill and Nancy Curley and Patrick Mulcahy and James E. Reilly was at that show. That to me, God in Light in 1990. Yes, honey. They were a co-head writing team of Nancy Curley, James E. Reilly, Patrick Mulcahy, and I believe Stephen Demarest. And you want to talk about the magic team. And if you think about it, it was everything you needed in a soap. Nancy Curley was writing, you know, Nancy and Patrick were trying to write some kind of Tennessee Williams, you know, Albert Albee, wonderful play, you know, or, you know, they were writing Shakespeare. And I don't know Stephen Demarest. I don't really know his writing style that much, but so I can't really quantify. But then you got Riley for the batshit crazy. So you get, you know, this, it was this, and that, and it was this perfect mix of lush, sexy, sophisticated. I dare anyone to find a woman as smart and sophisticated as Holly Lindsey was during that era. You know, they were just, and it was integrated without trying to be. Unlike current daytime shows that Curtis, unless Jordan is at work, her story is with all of the black people on General Hospital. If she's not at work, she with nothing but colors. But now on The Guiding Light, it wasn't like that. Hamp was best friends with Billy. They were like brothers. Jilly had a fully fleshed out career and was, you know, in league at times with scheming Roger Thorpe. And she was friends with Holly. And she almost had a dalliance with Alan Michael. You know, they would never do that. You know, we don't see Jordan looking at nobody white on that show. It's like, when can we get another one?
You know what? I was thinking when she first came there, I was like, she eyeballing Sonny. I was like,
No, Cat Speaks was best friends with Bridget Reardon. And they were all tight with Dylan. But she was, you know, she was loving on, you know, in the early days, looking at David like, oh, he cute. So, yeah, they put her with a black dude, but they kind of made you think Kat might fall for Dylan. But, you know, the show was just so integrated and well-written, and that it can be that again. I mean, so many of these people are still in this genre, but it doesn't always have to be just human drama. This Is Us and Big Little Lies were two of the biggest hits of this TV season. And there was nary a return from the dead or an evil twin or anything like that in either one.
Any chupacabra story.
In the Big Little Lies book, though, there is, spoiler alert, there is sort of an evil twin twist. But they didn't do that for, I guess David E. Kelly was like, yeah, we're not going to do that for the movie or for the miniseries. But, you know, human emotion, human drama can still be mined to make these shows great. So rant over.
On that note, we would encourage you to comment on this episode at daytimeconfidential.com. Follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/DCConfidential. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/DCConfidential. As always, you can find me at Luke_Kerr on Twitter. Jamie is at Jamie_Giddens. And Jillian is at Jillian Poe. Until next time, so long.
Bye.